Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, December 5th, 2017. IGAD's special envoy to South Sudan says rebel leader Riek Machar will be part of the forum to revive the peace deal.
We are now on the process of sending the invitation. So far, no one has received an invitation letter. But be assured, when the invitations go out, I assure you that he will also receive an invitation letter.
And South Sudan's former deputy finance minister says he was fired because he asked for transparency in government institutions.
We have always spoken publicly. We wanted to do reforms. According to the agreement, there were reforms which are supposed to take place. And doing that reforms means that we have to get to the truth very suspicious or something which is not very clear to me.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. IGAD's special envoy to South Sudan confirmed the forum to revive the 2015 peace deal will be held in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa on December 17. Ambassador Ismail Wise told this program in an exclusive interview that his office is sending invitations to all South Sudanese stakeholders, including rebel leader Riek Machar, who is under house arrest in South Africa, to attend the IGAD forum. The top IGAD diplomat says his office will not exclude the main actors in the South Sudan conflict.
We are at the stage of conducting the high-level revitalization forum. There, as you know, there will be now a council's meeting on 15 and 16th of this month here in Addis Ababa. And immediately after the council's meeting, the high-level revitalization forum will follow. That means starting on the 17th of this month.
How many stakeholders are invited for this revitalization forum? Because you've spoken to so many groups. Are you going to have all of them on board?
The main objective of the revitalization forum is that it has to be all-inclusive. And it will be fatal, in fact, to exclude any key stakeholder in this revitalization forum. Of course, everybody cannot be invited, but we, as I said, conducted already a mapping exercise of the key stakeholders, and this mapping exercise was approved and was sent to all the key stakeholders, and they have literally accepted that these are really the key players of the peace process in South Sudan.
Talking about stakeholders, the last meeting IGAD had in Juba, there was a press statement from a senior IGAD minister who said Dr. Riek Machar will not be part of the revitalization process, but he can be represented by his party members. Riek is a signatory to this agreement. If he's not going to be part of the process, how does that really work?
Well, you know, the council went one step ahead. Including myself, the chair of the council, and also one of the other council members, His Excellency Professor Gandour, we went all to South Africa and we consulted with him. And we discussed also about the forum and the stake on that forum. And he also really did agree to the concept that IGAD is proposing for the upcoming forum.
I don't want to base this interview on Dr. Riek Machar, but a lot of people are asking, is he going to attend in person?
Well, we are now on the process of sending the invitation. So far, no one has received an invitation letter so far. But be assured, when the invitations go out, I assure you that he will also receive an invitation letter.
Let's talk about IGAD's track record in mediation. IGAD has been involved in mediating the Sudan and South Sudan conflict for some time. The agreement that was signed in 2005 was an effort from the IGAD countries. But this time around, a lot of South Sudanese are looking at IGAD with a lot of suspicion. Could you give us a scorecard of IGAD's, you know, progress in South Sudan?
Well, you know it as a South Sudanese yourself, that IGAD has been involved in the South Sudan issue ever since the 1980s, and it continued. When this conflict erupted, it was IGAD that was on the table before any other institution, African Union, United Nations, name it. It was IGAD on the table. As you know, this region is currently united on one issue, that is restoring peace to South Sudan.
Now you're going to bring different stakeholders in Addis Ababa to sit with them and see how they can bring an end to the crisis in their country. This is happening in the backdrop of a relationship that has not been good with IGAD. What is it that is new that IGAD will do this time that it did not do in 2015?
Well, you know, in 2015, IGAD did a very good piece of work, frankly speaking. I do have the agreement in my hand, and the agreement is a document, of course. It's not bad. It only depends on the implementation of the agreement. Well, if you talk about that, perhaps since then that this agreement is not implemented, you might in one way or another be correct. And that is also the reason why IGAD have now decided to revitalize. What we are doing now different? Not much, honestly. We are building on that same peace agreement. As you know, we say very clearly it's not a renegotiation. We're not working on a new agreement. We are just revitalizing that same agreement.
That's Ambassador Ismail Wise, IGAD's special envoy to South Sudan. Wise will speak about IGAD's efforts to stay neutral in part two of this interview, which will air tomorrow. He was speaking to me earlier today from Addis Ababa. Nine bishops from the Episcopal Church of South Sudan are urging South Sudan's leaders to end fighting and recommit to revive the 2015 peace agreement. Daniel Martin, Friday, reports for VOA from Yei Town.
During the 3 days deliberations attended by church and community leaders, participants identified the triggers of conflict in the central Equatoria and came up with ideas about how the church and communities can work together to prevent conflict and promote peace. Religious and community leaders say repeated human rights violations, hate speech and restricted freedom of movement are some of the main triggers for conflict in the area. In a Saturday joint communique, the bishops agreed to play a peace-building role by initiating grassroots dialogue to achieve peace. They also called on all warring parties to protect civilians. Bishop Emmanuel Mure of Kajukeji Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan says church leaders also agreed to mediate talks between warring parties and to provide the mechanisms for communities to reconcile. Bishop Mure says they also agreed to communicate with the government officials and armed opposition groups to try to create a path for peace.
We agree that we have to team together as different denominations and also as religious leaders, including even the Muslims. We have to work together in order to get involved deeply to the issue of peace. The church is non-partisan. Secondly, we said we are actually neutral. And I believe that our position as neutral will allow the warring parties and the government to accept what we are suggesting.
Bishop Matthew Taban of Wunduruba, the Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says rampant human rights violations are a huge concern.
The scale and gravity of the conflict, the atrocities committed, is beyond human capacity and comprehension. Cessation of hostilities is therefore urgent in order to create a conducive environment for true conflict resolutions, transformation, and healing. We appeal to the warring party to stop the armed conflict and resort to dialogue, such as our ongoing IGAD revitalization process.
As Bishop Paul Yogusuk of the internal province of Central Equatoria of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan also decried widespread atrocities being committed against civilians and urged the leaders of the warring parties to be serious about revitalizing the peace deal.
The atrocities that are taking place, the injustices, the killings, raping, even in the heart of the city, our appeal is that both the government and the opposition recommit themselves to the revitalization of the peace agreement. Our people have suffered a lot as a result of the conflict.
Yogusuk says church leaders are preaching messages of peace and reconciliation as ways to end the conflict. In a Saturday joint communique, the bishops agreed to play a peace-building role by initiating grassroots dialogue to achieve peace. They also called on all warring parties to protect civilians and end hostilities immediately. The audio used in this story was recorded by Arua One-based journalist Robert Areika. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
South Sudan's former Deputy Minister of Finance says he believes he was fired because he insisted on reforms and transparency within the ministry. Mo Ambrose Thick says he learned about his dismissal last week when a presidential decree was read on the national television. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
Former Deputy Finance Minister Thick says he recently criticized a contract the Minister of Interior had with a German company in which the ministry agreed to pay up to $500,000 to the company to fix a broken computer system and software the government uses for processing passports and national IDs for South Sudanese citizens. The former deputy minister says he began asking questions after the processing of passports and IDs was halted.
I inquired how did this happen and why was it not paid all this time, because the system was closed down. No passports were issued, no IDs. So, of course, I must ask in my position what happened. I didn't get any answer that is, you will say, black and white, because I've never seen the contract. I've just heard this money has to be paid.
Thick says the terms of the contract were not good for South Sudan, because it gave a foreign company control over the country's ability to produce passports to its citizens.
This company sold us a software and sold us machinery, but they continue to own the code of the software itself, and that's why nothing was being done. I mean, and you know, there were people traveling, they want to go for school and so on, and we're not able to issue any passports, you know, IDs. So it's a matter of concern. It's not an easy thing. This thing kept dragging on. The money has not been paid. Everybody who is an economist will know that it was difficult to pay that money.
Thick says he voiced his concern that the government was not in a position to pay $500,000 when it cannot even pay its civil servants in the country. Juba-based researcher Augustino Tinmayai agrees the government does not have cash and that the little it does have goes into the pockets of well-connected individuals instead of paying the salaries of civil servants.
The government broke, and I don't understand why somebody would be fired by stating the facts. And it's obvious. We see it. The world sees it. We go around looking for money because we're broke. So the fact is that we just don't have the money. If the money is being gotten, then it doesn't get to some of us who work for, say, the university or some other places, especially in the public sector.
Mayai says the government mainly finances what it wants to pay for through accumulated arrears, money that it owes to tens of thousands of workers, both in the public sector and the regular forces.
The government hardly pays for anything. Not just a passport or legal documents. You have a whole lot. You have arrears all over the place. You have salaries not being paid. You have the public service. You have the army. People going for months without salaries. My suspicion is that Mo is probably concerned about that, paying people as opposed to paying for legal documents, which I think is humane and sensible.
President Kiir confessed to President Omar al-Bashir of Sudan during a visit to Sudan in October that South Sudan is too broke to pay its soldiers and government officials. The former deputy minister says he has demanded that there be more transparency in the way business is done in the finance ministry and other government institutions.
We have always spoken publicly. We wanted to do reforms. According to the agreement, there were reforms which are supposed to take place. And doing that reforms mean that you have to get to the truth of every possible suspicious or, you know, something which is not very clear to me as somebody who's in that position. So there are, it's not only one thing, there are many things that I've been doing.
Thick says it is true the government cannot pay the $500,000 requested by the German company.
I don't think it's criticism. It's just objectively describing the situation. This is an objective situation. We were not in position to pay the company. Also, it's not only the criticism, the way the contract has been signed. Not I'm now accusing anybody of misdeed or whatever. I have come to know that a lot of things that are happening in South Sudan are out of ignorance.
Thick says the contract between the Ministry of Interior and the German company must be amended in favor of a new one that gives South Sudan total control to print IDs and passports.
I think they should have renegotiated. They should have renegotiated the contract, because you can't continue people taking biometrics of a country and you can't get hold of it because the source code of the software is not in the country. It's somewhere else. It doesn't make sense. It's either you get a better contract or you scrap it and get a new contract so that you do better service for the people.
He says he has no hard feelings over his firing. President Kiir appointed Atiang Ding Atiang as the new deputy finance minister on Friday. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biadjo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan is questioning the mandate of the UN peacekeepers in the country. Stay tuned for details.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
tell us something that annoys you.
When someone takes what they know you love for granted, something like accent, people know I like to ask, but they take it for granted because they know no matter what, they will get you to do it. And it really annoys me because they know you love it that much, yet they treat you anyhow.
Poverty. That's one, straight up poverty. Like we now, I can say the youth, or even generally what is in the country, it's poverty totally. The rich are getting more richer, and the ones who are poor, there is no change. It's only by luck.
Something that annoys me is when I help somebody, doesn't show appreciation. When I help somebody, I know I don't have, but because of love, and that person failed to appreciate.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we are talking about protecting young people against HIV and AIDS. Governments must do far more to include young people in the global fight against HIV and AIDS. A new report says, despite progress in tackling the disease, it's estimated that 1,700 new HIV infections occur every day among young people around the world. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, it's hoped the issue will gain attention, thanks to Britain's Prince Harry.
It is time policymakers recognise that HIV-positive adolescents face unique challenges, says the report from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine alongside the charity Centre Bali. Among the recommendations are that young people receive adequate psychosocial support, a human rights-based approach to testing and care, and finding ways to sensitively discuss sex and relationships for adolescents living with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. Professor Rashida Ferrand co-authored the research.
We really need to be thinking about all the barriers at every step in that broad environment, both at facility level and in clinics, etc., but also recognizing the fact that most of the time young people do not spend in facilities. So we have to think of modifying the environments and the barriers that those environments place.
Campaigners say many adolescents in Africa are unaware of their HIV status and are afraid to get tested. 23-year-old Masedi Kewamodimo was born with HIV. Both her parents died from AIDS. Growing up in her native Botswana, Masedi grew frustrated with the barriers she faced and decided to reveal her HIV status in order to campaign for better treatment. She spoke to VOA about that decision.
It's one of the most difficult things I've ever faced in my whole life. Every single day I face stigma. People talk about it because, one, they fear it. Two, they assume certain people within our society have it. Three, they feel that they cannot welcome people who are living with HIV and AIDS.
The charity Center Bali, which helped put together the policy recommendations, was co-founded by Prince Harry, who is newly engaged to American actress Meghan Markle. She has also campaigned on health issues in Africa. Earlier this year, the prince chaired a meeting in London on adolescents with HIV, titled Let Youth Lead, and called for a change in global education on the disease.
Young people, the first time they know or the first time they hear anything about HIV and AIDS is probably by the time it's too late. Whether it's in the education system here in the UK, whether it's across Africa, whether it's across the world, HIV needs to be treated exactly the same as any other disease.
Campaigners hope the royal couple's star power will help them spread the vital message that young people's needs and fears must be addressed in the global drive to tackle HIV and AIDS. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
From London, we move back to Juba, where the government of South Sudan is questioning the mandate of the United Nations mission in South Sudan. UNMISS operates under Chapter 7 mandate, which authorizes peacekeepers to use military force to defend civilians under threat. But a South Sudanese minister says the mandate should be modified to focus on development. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
The Kiir administration says it wants Chapter 7 of the UNMISS mandate revised before the UN Security Council votes on renewing the peacekeeping mandate later this month. A UN team from UN headquarters in New York is in South Sudan to assess the situation on the ground. The team met with the South Sudan First Vice President Taban Dengai and other government officials in Juba today. Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomuro emerged from the meeting to tell journalists the government believes the Chapter 7 mandate should be eliminated because, in his words, South Sudan is already peaceful and stable.
Peace is already returning back to the country, and we feel that the resolution that is under Chapter 7 for protection of civilians should now revert back to Chapter 6, which encourages development.
The UN Security Council granted UNMISS a Chapter 7 mandate in August 2016 after fighting flared up in Juba between government soldiers and forces protecting former First Vice President Riek Machar. Consultant Kevin Kennedy, who is leading the UN team that has been visiting South Sudan for the past week, says his team met with several government ministers and other officials to assess whether the current UNMISS mandate is realistic.
Is the mandate being accomplished? If not, why not? What are the gaps? What can be done to close those gaps and so forth?
Kennedy says his team is also trying to understand the context under which the UN peacekeepers are operating in across the country.
Our concerns are they able to accomplish the currently assigned mandate? If not, why not? Should that mandate be adjusted or modified? That's our primary interest.
2 weeks ago, the special representative of the UN Secretary General, David Sierra, announced the UN team's visit. He said the team would assess South Sudan's security situation and consult with a number of government officials and representatives from 8 agencies. Sierra says the team will also spend 2 days in Addis Ababa to meet with the other South Sudanese groups, including the opposition.
The strategic review team will then report back to the UN Secretary General, who in turn reports to the Security Council. And its findings will help inform the decision of the Security Council on the renewal of the UNMISS mandate.
South Sudan government officials have stated repeatedly that they want the UNMISS mandate changed. Information Minister Michael Makuei told the reporters at a news conference in Juba back in September there is no need for UNMISS peacekeepers to operate in South Sudan and said the UNMISS mandate should only be renewed with Juba's consent.
Juba is at peace, but when somebody comes and he sees this UN moving, Talata, Arba, Thatcher moving just like that with their guns, now what message will that person take away with him? This is the situation we don't want. And this is why we are talking of revisiting the mandate.
Analysts like James Okuk, a lecturer of political science at the University of Juba, says it's the UN Security Council's decision to determine whether or not to alter the UNMISS mandate and that Juba can only apply diplomatic pressure to influence that decision. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Now for some football news. The Council for East and Central Africa Football Association tournament, known as SACAFA, kicked off this week in Kenya. South Sudan national team, the Bright Stars, were crushed by Ethiopia in a 3-0 match. It was the first match for both teams on day three of the tournament. 11 national teams are vying for the right to be the best in the East and Central African region. They will also share $60,000 in prize money. The SACAFA Challenge Cup is the oldest football tournament in Africa. The tournament was last held in 2015. And that is our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Peace at Long Last by Zahra Duk. Mechi jambu kuberam real overam larmazik akmet pyubu wayich pat ke wamar karangam abyurir pyo watan wayich listening to Zahra Duk with the song Peace at Long Last. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. What do you think about our show? Would like to know your comments. Send it to southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.